Chapter 9, About the Man Who Spat into the Washtub. "Come here, boys," said Good Fortune. "I want to introduce you to a gentleman to whom I'm giving a lift, as people should help one another. This gentleman will be coming part of the way with us."
"We are honored," said Big Tiger, treading warningly on Christian's toe.
The stranger, who was sitting on the running board of the truck, did not stir. His black mustaches hung over the corners of his mouth, and his embroidered cap was pushed down over his forehead. He looked very glum. Instead of the beautiful black silk jacket, he was now wearing a shabby green coat with a red sash. "Come on," said Good Fortune, "introduce yourselves. You need not be so stiff."
"My unworthy name is Compass Mountain," began Christian, bowing.
"I hardly dare tell the gentleman my name. I am called Big Tiger."
"Yes, yes," growled the stranger with a curt nod.
"Permit me to tell the boys that their elder is Mr. Greencoat," said Good Fortune. The formalities would have ended here, but Big Tiger held Christian firmly by the tail of his jacket. Both bowed once more, and Big Tiger spoke the beautiful compliment. "Our long yearning for the sight of you has at last been appeased." At this, the man called Greencoat laughed, but it was impossible to know whether he meant this politely or whether he laughed because such a ceremonial speech from a boy struck him as absurd. He stood up, walked over to the station, and sat down in the sun with his back against the wall. Not a single railway man or anyone else was to be seen, and the station presented a sad sight. Plaster had fallen from the walls, and there were bullet holes everywhere. Most of the windows were smashed, and broken telegraph wires hung down from an iron pole. "It can't be helped," said Big Tiger, and he thought of Peking, to which the war had now reached out. Good Fortune was searching around in the driver's cab. He lifted the top off the seats and was looking through the stores. At last he emerged with a basket of bread, some dried figs, and bean cheese. They all sat down near Greencoat, and Christian and Big Tiger took off their fur coats as the sun was hot. It was not so bad to be traveling, seeing strange new towns, and enjoying good food at the same time. Greencoat seemed to be known in Kalgan. A man who looked like a camel driver greeted him politely as he passed. Greencoat gave him a condescending nod, muttering into his beard something which sounded like old Hunghutse.
"I must ask Big Tiger afterwards what that word means," thought Christian.
He was eating bean curd and bread and surveying the station square. Three beggar boys had appeared a little distance off, but they did not venture to come nearer, although they too would have liked something to eat.
"Vermin," snarled Greencoat.
But then he beckoned the biggest of the boys, a pitiably starved-looking ragamuffin, who might have been 14 or a little more or less. His face was gray with dirt and dust, his clothes hung in rags, and as he came timidly near, he whispered,
"What is your command, Big Uncle?"
"Get us a can of boiling water for the tea," Greencoat ordered.
"But I have no can, Big Uncle."
"You have no can," shouted Greencoat indignantly, jumping up and giving the boy a resounding slap. The boy tumbled over, but nimbly dodged the kick which followed, and ran off without uttering the least whimper of pain. The others followed. How awful to have to look on at such beastly cruelty, thought Christian. Suddenly the lovely journey seemed spoiled for him. He did not want any more breakfast, and he looked over miserably at Big Tiger, wondering what he thought. But Big Tiger was sitting there quite unmoved, and it was only when he saw the angry tears in Christian's eyes that he gave a wink which meant, "Be quiet and pretend not to notice anything." This was very difficult for Christian. He hated Greencoat and would have liked to have beaten him up if that had been possible, but he could think of nothing but the inevitable, "It can't be helped."
"Did you say something?" asked Good Fortune.
"I was only thinking aloud," Christian replied, wiping away his tears. Greencoat cast a malicious glance at him. "It's not polite to think aloud," he said, and from that moment it was plain that the two were sworn enemies. Some minutes passed in silence, and Greencoat appeared to be waiting for someone. At last he stood up, walked away a few paces, and came back muttering, "No one can be depended on," or something of the sort.
"What does he mean?" whispered Christian.
"Apparently the boy he hit," answered Big Tiger. A little time passed, and then the boys reappeared, carrying a steaming brass kettle. "So you've come at last," said Greencoat, taking a coin from his purse. "Come here, I have something to say to you." He took the eldest boy aside and whispered to him. The boy nodded a few times, and then Greencoat came back with him. "Eat what's left. There's lots here," he said. But there was only a little bit of bean curd left, so Good Fortune went over to the truck and took out a piece of bread for each boy and cups for tea. "You're feeding up these scamps more than they deserve," remarked Greencoat. "They'll get fat bellies and then can't be sent out begging any more."
"Is that so?" asked Good Fortune.
"No, sir. We're begging for ourselves. We've lost our parents, and our home was destroyed in the ward."
"Eat," said Good Fortune. "When the cock crows at midday, the stomach is empty."
Greencoat drank his tea hurriedly and said to Good Fortune, "I've some business in town for a few minutes, but I'll be back by the time you're ready."
"You'd better hurry," replied Good Fortune. "You yourself want us to spend the night at Whitestone."
"Yes, yes," said Greencoat. "You needn't lay down the law to me." He went off, and Good Fortune looked after him with an air of annoyance. But then he got busy with the truck.